This is the Light in the Attic podcast. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Hillary.
And today we're going to talk about Spooner Oldham.
The Lord, he loves a rolling stone, and he leads him around all the danger zones and helps him to get on to where he's going.
For those of you who don't know, Spooner is one of the most prolific session musicians in music history. He is a keyboardist and organ player, and he comes from Alabama. He was born in Center Star, Alabama. Is that what it was?
Center Star.
Center Star, which is, I believe, very close to the famous Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where many of the early soul hits were recorded. And Muscle Shoals is sort of known as this phenomenon of a place where there's something in the Alabama mud that just produces hit soul records. We put out a record of Spooner's in 2015 called Potluck, and it's actually the only solo record that Spooner ever made, because he wasn't really interested in doing his own thing. He was always very content to be a sideman. So since a lot of people don't know much about Spooner, and since he is an adorable human, we thought that we would share some Spooner facts, just fast and loose.
Fast and loose, like we like them.
We interviewed Spooner for this podcast a little while ago, and so I got to meet him, and I also got to see that he wears Simpsons Converse.
Aw, man, that's
and,
awesome.
And, like, Dickies, and he's just, like, kind of amazingly stylish and cool. And I think it has a lot to do with his very cool daughter, Roxanne, who is also works in the music industry. Okay, Spooner facts. He's a Gemini.
Spooner? What does that mean again if he's a Gemini?
Geminis are like the cool guys, generally, you know, like leader of the pack, intellectual, charming. I don't know. I feel like Spooner has like a water moon or something because he's... He's sensitive and seems like an introvert.
Spooner played on Jewel's Who Will Save Your Soul.
Amazing.
Who would have even thought that? I had no idea, and I listened to that song a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. Listened it to death.
Many times.
In, like, elementary school.
Why he is called Spooner in the first place... that was a nickname that he received because when he was younger, he was in the kitchen and reached for a pan of water on the stove, and apparently a spoon flew off of the pan and was super duper hot and hit him in the right eye. And according to SpoonerOldham.com, he... to this day has no sight in his right eye, and I had no idea.
I had no idea either.
And his nickname came from a really sad accident.
Yeah, it's sort of strange that they would nickname him after that very unfortunate accident.
It stuck with him. And
certainly did. But his real name is Dewey.
Which is also
the most
sweet
southern name ever. Dewey Lyndon Spooner Oldham. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the sideman category and in the Musicians Hall of Fame in Nashville.
And he typically played, what, Wurlitzers or...
Organs, keyboards.
Organs, yeah. Electric pianos were his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So on today's episode, you are going to first hear Andrea Lyle read from her liner notes from the Potluck album. Andrea is an amazing writer. She has written a book about the music scene in Memphis, and it's called Waking Up in Memphis. She also did liner notes for some of our other releases like Lou Bond.
Gimmer Nicholson,
yeah. And my favorite Light in the Attic release of last year, Johnny Frierson's Have You Been Good to Yourself, which is seriously so underrated and so beautiful and honest and
sweet.
Sweet. It is just the sweetest thing ever. And if you haven't listened to that one, I highly recommend it because it was kind of overlooked a little bit, I guess. I don't know. But you're going to hear Andrea Lyle read her liner notes from Spooner's album. And then we hear an interview that we did with Spooner with his daughter, Roxanne, after he did a Lanyap session for Aquarium Drunkard's website.
So now we're going to play a track from Potluck, the album that we put out, called Julie Brown's Forest. And little fun Spooner fact, in the liner notes, it says that he never actually knew anyone named Julie Brown, but that he was like, maybe I heard the name somewhere, and I just thought it sounded good, which to me is just so Spooner.
Oh no, my friend, she's not the one for you, my friend. You'd better get away. You'd better stay away from Julie. Don't go walking in Julie Brown's forest, 'cause you can't see the forest for the trees.
It's highly unlikely that there's a more unassuming figure in American music history than Spooner Oldham. The lanky Alabama organist, still boyish at 71 years old, cuts an unpretentious presence as he walks through the doors of the Marriott Shoals Hotel, even as Neil Young's Unknown Legend, which features Oldham on organ, floats through the house sound system. On this sunny fall afternoon, he's recognized by the entire staff at the Marriott, who smile and make small talk as he makes his way to the hotel bar.
The forest falls.
With the exception of a few years in Los Angeles, Oldham has spent the entirety of his life within 150 miles of Muscle Shoals. He was born in Center Star, just east of Florence, where his father's string band had cut a record in the early 1940s. By the early 1960s, Oldham was ensconced in the emerging music scene in Muscle Shoals. First at Tom Stafford's Spar recording studio, then at Rick Hall's Fame Studios, providing session work for Arthur Alexander's You'd Better Move On, Etta James' Tell Mama, Jimmy Hughes' Steal Away, and Aretha Franklin's I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. As one of the founders of the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section, along with guitarist Jimmy Johnson, drummer Roger Hawkins, and bassist David Hood, Oldham helped forge a new Southern soul sound, creating a fully integrated combination of black and white musicians, much like what was happening simultaneously at Memphis' Stax Records. For Oldham and his fellow Muscle Shoals musicians, crossing the race barrier in the recording studio hardly seemed revolutionary. But outside of the local studio scene, they were viewed as underground heroes. Politics aside, Oldham's contributions to the demo tapes, reels of sessions work, and black lacquered 45s that began to roll out of Muscle Shoals were equally indispensable, as the reviews, interviews, books like Robert Gordon's It Came From Memphis, and Peter Grelnick's Sweet Soul Music, and the 2014 documentary film Muscle Shoals all proclaim. Spooner quickly ascertained when to provide the bedrock, when to float alongside the melody, and when to take listeners to church. In Muscle Shoals, Oldham found the perfect collaborator, another young white soul music lover named Dan Penn. By 1962, the year of Arthur Alexander's breakthrough, Oldham and Penn were co-writing hits. Joe Simon's Let's Do It Over. James and Bobby Purify's I'm Your Puppet. The Sweet Inspirations' Sweet Inspiration. And Percy Sledge's Out of Left Field. Penn moved to Memphis to set up shop at the hit-making American Recording Studios in 1967, and Oldham joined him soon after. At American, the duo collaborated on more hits, including the Box Tops' Cry Like a Baby. By the end of the next decade, when Oldham decided to relocate some 1,700 miles west of Muscle Shoals, he was known as one of the chief architects of the Southern Soul sound. That Spooner playing the Farfisa on Percy Sledge's When a Man Loves a Woman, providing the funky electric piano chords on Aretha's Chain of Fools, and playing call and response style with Wilson Pickett's gritty vocal lines on Mustang Sally. He changed the world for a good thing he's found. If she is bad. The late 1960s had dawned on a changed South. On April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis when Oldham and Penn were living there. Memphis became a tough place to work overnight, especially for those in the integrated music business. At the same time, on both coasts, a new wave of rock and roll musicians, led by the likes of the Rolling Stones, the Flying Burrito Brothers, and one-time famed sessions player Duane Allman, were hipping their fans to Southern Soul. Back home in Alabama, I started getting calls, Oldham recalls. Come on out here. We're going to do a house band like Memphis and Muscle Shoals and get different singers in here. In the summer of 1969, Spooner married his longtime girlfriend and moved west. Ironically, their move was spurred by an old-school talent agent, Seymour Heller, who represented a vast array of aging actors and musicians, ranging from Ginger Rogers and the McGuire sisters to the Traneers, Liberace, and Lawrence Welk. In the late 1960s, Heller opened Producers Workshop, a recording studio in the heart of Hollywood. Producers Workshop was run by Ray Harris and Ed Cobb, who determined that to give to Heller's studio an identity, they'd put together a house band a la Fame, Miami's Criteria Studios, and Memphis' labels High and Stax Records. Monday through Friday, Spooner's wife Karen attended classes at Los Angeles' Chiropractic College, and for 5 years, Spooner punched the clock at Producers Workshop. Atlanta natives Emery Gordy Jr. and Dennis St. John came to Producers Workshop to play bass and drums, respectively. 19-year-old Arizonan Richard Bennett, who had already been working in Los Angeles for a few years, was recruited on guitar. Oldham was handpicked to provide the keys. For 5 days a week, the sessions players would back up artists like the Letterman and Liberace, record folk albums and rock albums, cut jingles, do anything they could push through there, as Bennett says. Oldham recalls the studio group cutting Liberace's A Brand New Me, a covers album released on Warner Brothers in 1970. Yes, that's the laconic Oldham playing electric piano behind the bedazzled Vegas icon on Judy Blue Eyes, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, and Na Na Hey Hey Kiss Him Goodbye. They had a selection of songs and showed them to us, Oldham explains. We recorded and he came a week or two later with a 1936 model Steinway Concert Grand and did his thing. He said, anybody, y'all who played on it, are welcome to come by when I do my thing, if you like. So we all went and watched him do his thing. I remember my wife, Karen, took him a chocolate cake, and he said, I'm on a diet, but I'm going to eat some of that. Lee, they called him. He had on jeans, just a regular guy, and his friend was a strapping kind of Western cowboy. So maybe that was one of the first things we did in the studio. Then, as Bennett says, in the midst of it, they decided Spooner would make an album. If you have the chance to make an album, you don't say no. I don't really think I wanted it so much, Oldham says in his soft manner. I think it was shoved on me. We'd got all this stuff set up, and now what do we do? I think we just wanted to do our version of contemporary pop rock. We were creative, and without looking too far, I was a songwriter, and I could sing a little bit. I never considered myself a singer, but I could play and write. I think it was something to do, like tag, you're it. I have no ego about it, Oldham continues. Who or what or when? Let's just do this thing together. Let's have some fun and play some music. Potluck, Oldham's sole full-length released under his own name, quickly came and went in 1972. Side A of the album is an amalgamation of rarities, penned by the likes of Dan Penn and Freddie Weller, while the B-side is more conceptual, a seven-song medley of some of Oldham's biggest hits, capped by a winding arrangement of the traditional gospel tune, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? The album's cover looks more like a prog rock release. It's a literal interpretation of the title. Two oversized chicken talons stick out of a stock pot simmering on a stove. They called me and said, we've got two pictures for you to decide which you want for the album cover, Oldham says. They were big, blown up for me to look at. One of them was the one I chose, which was the chicken in the pot. The other option was a sort of erotica photo. Ron Raffaelli, he was sort of famous. I remember he did the Jimi Hendrix photo with a light halo around his head. Well, I smoked Sherman cigarettes back in those days. Dark-skinned paper, long skinny cigarettes. The reason being that they were organically grown, no chemicals added. Ron saw me smoking one at some point and asked me to blow some smog. I'm seeing that he's getting creative, and when I got back and saw the photo, I thought it was an interesting concept. He had a couple of nudes in there somewhere and some other kinds of things. That blew my mind, and I just couldn't buy into it. Oldham shakes his head at the 40-year-old memory and laughs. That was basically it. The chicken in the pot or some smoke. Gordy says that the sessions for the album were based on head arrangements. We just went in, Gordy says. I don't think there was a lot of planning going on. That's the best way Spooner works, and I'm saying that that is both praise and a condemnation. At Producer's Workshop, Spooner was in the moment for the most part. I don't think there was any grand scheme going on with Potluck. We just went in the studio and started playing. "1980" was penned with Karen Oldham. That was written in 1970, so it was like, maybe in the not-too-distant future, this may happen, Oldham says. Of life's package of puzzles, he says, I think I wrote that one by myself, which is a rarity. I was probably at home one day, thinking in real-life terms, you know? If I chose to go on a little vacation or a trip, this is what it's going to take at this time in my life. While the sun keeps trying to shine.
Puzzles comes in yellow, happy, sorrow, green and red.
Contemplating the album's fourth track, Julie Brown's Forest, Oldham says, I don't think I ever knew a Julie Brown. I may have heard something somewhere in passing about someone with that name, and I got it in my brain. Easy Listening was written with rising country star Freddie Weller at an apartment in Burbank. Both he and Emery Gordy came out of Joe South's group, Oldham explains. Freddie was playing in Paul Revere and the Raiders, and I went to see them in Magic Mountain in L.A. one night. Freddie and I met, and I think we had a southern attachment. Oldham pauses to try to explain the creative process. Songwriting, in my experience, has always been a cooperative thing, he says. Freddie or Dan may have an idea, or I may have an idea. There are some chord changes, you never know who's going to bring what. From there, you just start writing, playing, singing, and writing. I can't teach it. There are people who try to teach songwriting, but to me, I might as well be teaching algebra, which I don't understand. The thing is, he continues, with those songs, the creative process is already in motion. You've got to get it in motion for accidents to happen. You've got to be looking, searching, and mining. The journey is what's fun.
Oh, the rain is a-falling while the wind is a-blowing and the sun keeps trying to shine on my head.
Released on the Family Productions label as FPS 2703, Potluck surfaced and quickly sank. Other musicians would have regrets about the way Potluck was mishandled, but Oldham chalks it all up to experience. You did it, we're here, what are we going to do, he says, reiterating the attitude of the session's players at Producers Workshop. Do something. That's the way we felt. No one was bringing anything else to the table. Let's do something. I got this little thing, you know, come check it out. By this point, reminiscing about Potluck has him in stitches. I don't think anybody, anywhere, at any time, has ever heard it, he guffaws. I'm just happy someone wants to hear it now.
And I hear you breathing gently in my ear. When the world outside is tearing me to pieces, and the noisy city starts to get me down, I've got something peaceful.
Hello, my name is Matt Sullivan, and this is the latest edition of the Light in the Attic podcast. I'm sitting here with a very special guest today, Spooner Oldham, and another special guest, his daughter Roxanne, and Jackie, who does the podcast, is here as well. And we're in Los Angeles at a studio, and very lucky to be here. So Spooner, thank you for coming by, as well as Roxanne.
Good to be here, Matt and Jackie, and our friend over here. What's
Mike.
His name?
Mike. Mike, yeah. Mike the engineer.
Thank you.
Yes, Mike, thank you.
For tolerating our sounds.
So, you know, for those that don't know, they know, if they don't know your name, they know much of your work. You've been on so many of the greatest recordings of the last 100 years.
I've been blessed with opportunities, you know, willing to work. I think that's, and a little talent thrown in, but. That's about it, you know, that's key to success.
Well, a few to mention, I know there's so many, but, you know, with Dan Penn, your songwriting partner, you wrote Do You Write Woman, I'm Your Puppet, Woman Left Lonely.
Excuse me, Matt, I always get miscredited for Do Write Woman. I did not write that song.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Chipped Moman and Dan Penn, but I do know from whence the rumor came. It's I finally asked my friend Chris Settridge, who was in a band called the Flying Burrito Brothers, and they'd start disbanding, and I started playing a lot of sessions. They wanted him on bass, so when I moved to Los Angeles, he helped me meet a lot of the Southern California rock and pop people, and they started using me also. So I asked Chris, I said, I hadn't met him coming through Fame Studio in Moses Shoals, Alabama, when he was about 18. I think he was going to Hollywood to be with Johnny Rivers' band. And I said, Chris, this is years later, they had that record out, and I noticed they had my Dan Penn Spooner Oldham Do Right Woman. I said, did you tell them that? I didn't. He said, yeah, I did. But he just assumed Dan I wrote it, because at that time we were having a flurry of records that, with our name, Penn Oldham thing. So, you know, it was one of those assumptions that just got carried. It got on the record, the Pleader Brothers, but of course, they got the money thing straight day one. Right. I never got a check. And
well, it's a great cover they do. The Burritos cover,
yeah,
is really great.
Yeah.
And so you've obviously played organ and keyboards on a zillion records, from Aretha's Chain of Fools, When a Man Loves a Woman by,
yeah,
Percy Sledge.
That one,
rest in peace.
Was a special moment. Yeah, and of course he's deceased now, and it was I consider him a good friend. Although I played on the organ and piano with him his first three Atlantic record albums. But then, I never played a live gig with him. except maybe one or two toward the end of his life, sort of a celebration thing. But yeah, I never like went on the road with him. Of course, that's the nature of being a session guy. You don't do that much. Except I started doing that in the 70s because playing more tours because, as I saw it, record companies in general were signing recording artists who wrote and played their own songs, bands. More of that, more of that, more of that. And I understood that the concept is easier for everybody, you know. But so therefore, session work was becoming a little less. And you know, when I had an opportunity to do a tour, I thought, well, you better be smart and try it, you know. And I didn't really like touring at first, but now after 8 or 10, I'm adapted.
That's great. Well, we're here today in celebration of a new release for us, but it's been in the can for a while. But your first and sole solo record called Potluck that came out in 1972 on Family Productions. And, you know, I always, from Lightning Addict's perspective, we always wanted to reissue this record. And so it was always a kind of, how do we find Spooner? How do we reissue this record? How does it work? And then weirdly enough, I met Roxanne, your daughter. And Roxanne, I didn't know till much later that she was your daughter. And so then, you know, Roxanne helped, I think, bring all this stuff to fruition. So a huge thanks to Roxanne for making this happen. But it's a great record that, you know, a lot of people are really are not familiar with. So I wanted to ask, you know, 43 years later, what is your feeling on, you know, this record coming back in the world?
Well, like you said, I don't think it was heard much, and I don't understand all the dynamics of what was going on, but I did, at the time it came out, I heard there were 7 albums released that month by this company that I was working with. So that's a big release thing to me, and I understand that they went bankrupt pretty quick. So that tells me, for whatever reason, that there weren't many records put out there, probably. I'm not saying I'm not doing a poor pitiful me. I think it had all the chances in the world to do great if it's going to. But I don't think it got around too much. And that's good. Somebody may want to hear it, you know. I feel like it's time I start another record soon.
You should. That'd be fantastic. Well, you know, you came out, the record, a lot of people don't know, the record was made in Los Angeles, and you came out to Los Angeles around 1970-ish, 69-ish, and they got you out here as this new endeavor, so to say, for the producer's workshop.
Right.
And, you know, what was your first thoughts maybe on Los Angeles at that time? You'd obviously, I imagine, been out here before, but, you know, you were living here.
Well, I'm here today. This is like, April 29, 2015, and as we speak, I think there's 10 or 12 million people in Los Angeles County. When I moved here, it was different in the sense that there was 3 million people in Los Angeles County. So to see, you know, all those years I've been back and forth out here, and you have to adapt a minute. I mean, if I leave a couple of years, then it's changed a bit, although it's always the same. It's got best of everything out here, I think, you know, great food, movies, music, something going on all the time. And I always liked the idea of being close to the mountains and close to the beach, you know. So yeah, I still like it.
Were there things you missed of home?
Did I miss these things at home?
Were there things that you missed at home when you came out to L.A. for the first time?
Yeah, 2 things. One was self-rising cornmeal, and the other was self-rising flour. So I always bought it in Alabama, brought 5 pounds in my luggage, you know.
Sounds necessary.
That's great. Wow. I was going to ask kind of vice versa, where there when you go back to Alabama, are there things you miss of Los Angeles, but maybe the ocean?
Mexican food?
Well, I love the Mexican food out here, yeah. I love the There's a lot. I like a lot of things out here. But, you know, there again, the world is getting smaller. We got good Mexican food in Alabama.
Really?
You know, I found a good place. So the things are indigenous to here. I don't know. It's got a lot of...
But did you not miss the river? Did you miss the river and things like that?
No, you know, I've been in Rogersville, Alabama. You drive up there, and it's got a little sign that says, "Welcome to Rogersville, a fisherman's paradise." Yeah, I've been there 22 years, and I have access to water. I haven't been fishing yet, so.
One day.
I mean, and have people coals. Keep encouraging me, my wife, Karen, she'll... You know, holiday, birthday, Christmas, whatever, she'll give me a big book of fishing lures and a rod and reels. And I get gifts, all these encouragement of fishing, but I never broke them out yet.
Are you working on anything now? Any projects coming up?
Always. It's like the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
The latest thing, a couple of days ago, with Peggy Young and Survivors, we did a country western kind of festival, Churchella.
Stagecoach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and did, you know, a set, and then we came back to Los Angeles out to Sportsman Lodge. Me and Kelvin Holly, and she wrote some music to her lyrics, sort of, basically. And in 2 days, we had it done, you know, like 9 songs finished. And, so now she wants to book time, get in the studio, you know, get her, we have to figure out who's doing what, when. And
that's fantastic.
You know, but in baby June. And then I'm always writing songs with Carl Holder and Mark Normer once a week. And we've accumulated. I'm not a numbers guy with songs. I just seem to have one good one. It's 140 mediocre. But it's hard to determine when you're doing it what's going to turn out, you know, right, to be the one you like best. But we've got like 140 songs with a band demos in 3 years, you know.
Wow.
So the point is now is, you know, then the workload gets more shifted to your shoulders. Well, nothing happened to it. Because they're sitting at home in a box. You know, yeah, the work part is the people that hear them, knocking on doors, making appointments. I figure that's the role of a song publisher, really. And I don't publish my own thing, so I'm the world's poorest publisher in two regards.
Well, you're going on tour in July, the UK.
Oh, yeah. Me and Dan Penn, old friends, yeah. Go to Europe, do a songwriter, singer-songwriter duo thing. Play some of our old songs. And some of them he and I wrote, some of them he wrote with somebody else, and some of them I wrote with somebody else. So
that'll be a nice tour.
Oh, so original music. It'd be fun, you know, always good to see different environments. You know, good how people interact with themselves and with others. You know, let's just sort of get a quick lesson in human nature all of a sudden. I like that.
I think people would enjoy to see you guys play over here if there, you know, comes a time. But
yeah, we've got a lot of questions. When are you coming here, you know? So that's good that anybody's asking questions. I want you to come to their Four Square Hotel.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Well, thank y'all.
We're honored to re-release your record
out
in the world.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm already, I want to order a case for wholesale.
We're going to give you some coffees. Don't you worry. Yeah, we'll give you a discount. No. Yeah, you're going to get some coffees. Yeah.
The reason that came up is like this morning, my phone in the shirt pocket were vibrating. Yeah, I want to tell you, I hadn't heard it ring in weeks. I said, missed call. And so it's on a vibrator, I guess.
Well,
it's in my shirt, and then I answered it. I don't usually just answer immediately till I figure out if it's sales pitch or whatever, you know. And it was a guy at Birmingham Record Collectors Club, and he wants me and Dan to play, which we're going to do. They're going to induct Sandy Posey as into their Hall of Fame. And they inducted me and Dan and Donnie last year. So he says, you got any records you might sell? We got to have a table set up for you guys. And I said, well, I don't know. I may have some by then. It's August sometime.
We'll have some. You know. Yeah. We'll have some. Maybe that could be the early release or something. Because we're looking at September. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But maybe it could be first for people in Birmingham get the first first crack at it. Yeah, exclusive.
Yeah, they're looking for women. Verbally asked me about, you know, I assume Alabama women first because they're there. And I mentioned Emmylou Harris. I know she's from Birmingham. Need to get her in there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a girl, Captain and Tennille, you know, Love Can Keep Us Together record. It seemed like one of those girls. Girl,
is Candy in there? Candy Stanton?
Well, yeah, that's known. Thank you. Yeah, but I'll give them some more names. So.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks again. Really an honor to sit here with you.
Thank
you. Be releasing your music.
Good luck with all you're doing, and happy trails.
Yes.
Happy trails.
Happy trails.
Sitting home all alone, won't you come on over? The band is playing loud, and hey, we've got a good crowd. There's room for you if you wanna come on over.
Well, it's really fun to share some stories and some information about Spooner with everyone because it seems like not many people know who he is, which is criminal.
Yeah.
Because of his accomplishments and his talents.
Hope we've given a good introduction to the man.
What have we got coming up, Jackie?
Last week we released an album that is a reissue of a really rare, really cool ambient album with Gigi Mason, the Italian composer, ambient composer on the A side, and Charles Hayward of This Heat and Camberwell Now on the B side.
One cool thing about the Gigi Mason and Charles Hayward album is that one of Gigi Mason's tracks called Clouds was sampled in a Bjork song, which is amazing. It's a song called It's In Our Hands. I think it's from a compilation or a best of album?
I don't know if I know that Bjork song, and I love Bjork.
It's cool. You should listen to it. Oh, yeah. You said that Bjork makes you feel cold when you listen to it.
In a good way, though.
Yeah. You said it makes you feel like the air conditioner is on.
Yeah, well, because there was this one. I mean, every summer is insanely hot and horrible in Los Angeles, but
sure,
it was particularly bad one summer. And so this was when I was in like high school, I think. And I just like locked my bedroom door and drew the curtains and made it as dark as possible and turned on like the AC and all the fans and listened to Bjork really loudly. And it like really cooled me down.
That's great. I love that. Every time I hear Bjork now, I just think of
air conditioners
yeah. And being really chill.
There's a lot of like air and like flyness
Iceland.
And like Iceland.
I mean,
exactly. She's from the land of ice. What could be cooler?
Greenland. It's cooler.
Oddly enough, yeah.
Another album we have coming out on February 17th is something that we're all really excited about. It's pretty much one of our first roots blues albums that we've ever put out.
It might be our only real blues release.
Yeah, it might be our only one. You're right.
Like true blues.
It is a record called Everyday Seem Like Murder Here by a man named Hayes McMullen. And
it was, if I may.
Yes, you may.
Famous archivist, blues archivist, Gail Dean Wardlow, who's most known for having unearthed Robert Johnson's death certificate, which was a big deal. He was doing a research trip through Mississippi in the 60s and sort of introduced himself to this older sharecropper guy, Hayes McMullen, on a whim, and Hayes was in his 60s at the time. So he's been dead for a long time, to put it delicately.
He died in the 80s.
But he's one of our oldest artists in our whole catalog. Because, I mean, he was born in what, like
1902
or something? 1902. Anyways, so Gail Wardlow introduces himself to Hayes and is just trying to get information about the original Delta Blues players that he's obsessed with, like Charlie Patton. And Hayes is like, oh, yeah, I played with Charlie. He, like, played with Charlie Patton in the 20s, which is insane. And so Gail Dean Wardlow was like, can I, like, bring a bottle of whiskey and a guitar to your house and maybe you'll, like, play some songs and tell me some stories? And that's what happened.
And then he was like, I haven't played the guitar in 30 years because I'm a deacon in a church and the blues is the devil's music.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Oh, and like his wife didn't like it or something?
Yeah, he gave up the blues. He traded juke joints for Jesus. I just made that one up right now.
That's a good one.
Yeah, he hadn't, allegedly when this recording was made, hadn't played guitar in decades, but...
You would never know. He's like...
It's incredible.
Lightning.
The finger picking, the classic blues style, it's like he never missed a beat.
Yeah. And then he throughout the record, we have audio of him telling stories about...
Running away from floods, playing these juke joints in the Delta, getting drunk, and raising hell.
It's so cool. It's just like potentially one of the last of these sort of finds from that time period. So, super special.
It's very cool. And one of the tracks has been released before. None of the other ones have ever been released before. So it's all... gonna be new to your ears, and
you can listen to one on our YouTube. What is it? Fast Old Train. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yep. I guess that'll do it for this month's episode of the Light in the Attic podcast. Next month, what do we have coming up next month, Jackie?
We are going to be talking about the story of Tumbleweed Records.
Oh yeah, Tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed was a little independent record label in Denver, Colorado that a couple of dudes started with a little investment from
Gulf and Western.
Gulf and Western of just a little investment of $5 million.
Yeah.
But for now, we'll just say
farewell.
Thanks for listening.